reaching out to your comment lines from the last hour, and just reaching out to ask to inform listeners of the upcoming table quiz in aid of Cancer Care West, which is taking place in the Porter Shed at Dáil on Thursday, the 16th of May. It'll be emceed by our very own Ollie Turner with a raffle with spot prizes from the Connacht Rugby, Dean Hotel, Glenoe Abbey, and Fodsale Saunas, the Hardyman, Hansen Burger, and so much more, all for a great cause. And looking elsewhere, some of the comments from the Nature Restoration Law discussion we had this morning, and also pedestrian bridge. Let the cyclists dismount and walk across the new bridge. The listener says, Deputy Fitzmaurice is anti-environment and cannot admit that a lot of farmhouses and buildings are built on floodplains as a result of bad planning. We are in a climate and species extinction crisis, and the likes of Deputy Fitzmaurice are making sure that these crises deepens. Just because he shouts doesn't mean what he says makes sense, says this listener. Deputy Fitzmaurice wants to drag us back to the 19th century. Another caller says, as a farmer myself, the re-wetting of peatlands is an issue with which farmers should take seriously. There are enormous sinks of carbon. However, those which aren't re-wetted are slowly releasing enormous amounts of greenhouse gases. Peatlands are a great resource for farmers. They are essentially underground forests, and as such, farmers should be fairly compensated for the maintenance and any loss or cost with re-wetting these lands. However, a solid argument for making these mandatory rather than voluntary would seem to uphold all, as the gases which are released from the given farm's peatlands go on to affect everyone's environment. Though the blame does not lie with any given individual farmer themselves, it is an issue with which policymakers and farmers should work together to resolve. Farmers are demonised and under enough pressure already that a solution to this issue must be comprehensive, concrete and fair for all. Another caller says, time for a referendum on Europe. It's time to leave. The only way to save the planet is to remove us humans. We will not stop climate change, only slow it down. But bad decisions are being made now. Wind turbines flooding our beautiful country and destroying biodiversity, landscapes and rural communities. And finally, another listener says, just ask Senator O'Reilly if she wants to look at the skies and see all the aircraft polluting the atmosphere and log into Radar 24. That's where the huge pollution is coming from, and they keep coming in this morning. Now, though, I want to turn to my next discussion and debate, because we're joined on the line by Sinn Féin Deputy Mairead Farrell. We'll be joined shortly on the line by Fine Gael Senator Sean Kyne, because we're looking at the payments for Ukrainian refugees, which are set to be cut under government plans. Ukrainian refugees who came into Ireland in 2022 and 2023 and who are in state-provided accommodation will have their payments cut from €232 a week to €38.80 under a memo going to Cabinet. Ministers will consider a memorandum which will lead to all recipients of temporary protection status receiving the same benefits regardless of when they first entered the state, while the entitlements of international protection applicants are also being reviewed. Now, Deputy Mairead Farrell, to you first, what do you make of these plans? I understand that I believe Sinn Féin had called for something similar to be, in effect, like, I suppose, a timescale for these supports for Ukrainian refugees.
Thanks for having me on, and it sounds like I missed a fairly lively discussion earlier from the text messages that came in there. So I'm a pity I'm up in Dublin and missed it. Well, look, I think you hit the nail on the head. Look, this is something that realistically, you know, it was never going to be viable to have a kind of a two or three tier really system in place, you know, on a continuous basis for different people fleeing war like that, you know, depending on where they were coming from. And the reality is that just wasn't going to be realistic to continue and to uphold. So obviously, where the situation is now, it depends on when different people coming from Ukraine come in. You know, they're entitled to different supports and that. And then obviously, people fleeing from, say, the likes of Palestine or Congo or whatever, they would be entitled to different amounts. So I don't think it was ever realistic, to be honest, that it would remain as a different type of system depending on where you were coming from. So that was something like that. And that's obviously clearly now going to Cabinet today. I think at the same time, they're saying there's going to be a review on the €38.50 in its entirety. It'll be interesting to see what comes out of that. Obviously, I haven't a clue at this point what will come out of that review, but it will be interesting to see what that review says.
Yeah, we're also joined on the line by Fine Gael Senator Sean Kyne. And this has been a big topic over the past few weeks and months, Sean. And finally, Cabinet are acting on it in a very robust capacity, it must be said. Is this something that needed to happen now?
Well, I think, John, and thanks for having me on, and good morning to your listeners and to Mairead. I think we have to acknowledge that it's been 2 years now since the temporary protection directive came into being following the illegal invasion of Ukraine, and about 106,000 people have arrived in the state since then. Now, a number of months ago, the government acted in relation to the payments for new arrivals from Ukraine under the beneficiaries of temporary protection, and those payments were reduced. And since then, we've seen a drop-off in the number of arrivals. And there was concern within government that the payments were being seen as a draw, encouraging people to come here, and particularly sort of second movement. So people that might be living in another European country that were previously in Ukraine that were coming here. So the government acted at that time to reduce those payments, and they've had an impact in terms of the numbers. So in terms of, I'm not privy exactly to what's in the government memo today to Cabinet, but I understand they will be looking at the overall payment rates and you know, evening it out in terms of treating Ukrainians the same as others here, you know, as guests of the state, if you like. So, you know, it is important that we have a robust but fair process in relation to those arriving in this country, and I think that you know, it's important to note that, you know, there has been a drop off since the changes were made over the last number of months. And also the number of Ukrainians relying on state-provided accommodation is decreasing every week. You know, people are focusing on becoming independent. And I think most people who come to this country want to end up, you know, whether it be in work, living with families or friends in their own situation. So, you know, they want to live independently, integrating into local communities, and maybe perhaps some are leaving to return to Ukraine. So, you know, the last figures I see is that the Central Statistics Office estimates that over 22,000 people who were granted temporary protection are no longer in the state.
Okay. You mentioned the double movements there, Sean, and I'm going to go back to Deputy Mairead Farrell, because I know that yesterday a judge ruled that provisions of the UK's Illegal Migration Act should be disapplied in Northern Ireland as they undermine human rights protections guaranteed in the region under the post-Brexit arrangement. That is the Windsor framework, and that was decided by a judge in Belfast yesterday. So perhaps this Rwanda policy that the UK has adopted, it might just be getting robust legal challenges now, Deputy Farrell.
Yeah, like, and it does very much look like that. Like, obviously, you know, we saw the ruling yesterday, and that does, like, literally deal with the Windsor framework. But, like, I mean, from my understanding, you know, it is still possibly going to be challenged at least once, if not numerous times, in Britain itself. And then obviously we've seen a Labour government, the Labour Party saying that if they were in government that they wouldn't enact this Rwanda policy. So whether it'll actually ever come fully, I suppose, into effect is something that will have to be seen. But at this point in time, it definitely looks like it's facing numerous challenges for sure.
Yeah. Over to you, Senator Kyne. What did you make of that move, I suppose that ruling from the court in Belfast yesterday? Will it actually have implications here in Ireland in terms of stopping those double movements? We've seen the huge percentage accessing this country via Northern Ireland.
Yeah, I mean, that's something obviously the Irish government will have to consider carefully. You know, I know the Good Friday Agreement is of extreme importance to people right across the island, and indeed across the two islands, as the Taoiseach said. So obviously the government will have to consider carefully what the judge has ruled in Northern Ireland. I think Mairead is right in terms of, you know, the possible impact on Rwanda, and obviously if there's a change of government in the UK, that will have a knock-on impact there as well in terms of removing or possibly removing the Rwanda policy. But clearly there's been a large number of movements from the UK via Northern Ireland into the Republic over the last, particularly this year. Whether it's related to Rwanda or not, we don't know. But certainly there was a bit of a spat a number of weeks ago between both governments in relation to that, and they were up to local elections in the UK. But clearly, the majority of people seeking asylum in this country now are coming across the border. That would be the evidence that would be received. The numbers coming via ports and airports will be dropped, but the numbers presenting themselves at international protection offices and who would say that they come from Northern Ireland, you know, is running at between, you know, 66% and 80%, depending on the figure. So clearly there is an impact. And when people say, and I hear this quite often, that you're bringing too many people into the country. And as I say, people are arriving. And when they're arriving, we have to deal with their claims for asylum. And they have to be processed. And despite, again, what some people might say, you know, anybody arriving in this country claiming for asylum are photographed, they are fingerprinted, they are assessed against the database across Europe as well. It's important to know that, and unfortunately, not everyone believes that. But that is that is the fact, and that is what we've been told by both the Minister for Justice and the Taoiseach at party briefings.
Just staying on the asylum seeker topic, Senator Kyne, I know that the Cabinet is also ordering a review of entitlements for asylum seekers applying for international protection, with a report to be completed within weeks. Are we seeing a tightening up now of the asylum seeker process? Because the big criticism is that the rules-based system that we have is not being enforced to the degree it needs to be.
I'm not sure what's in mind there. The payment is quite modest. It's €38.80 per adult and €29.80 per child per week. So I'm not sure what exactly is being considered by government. But clearly, there is a cost to all of this. You know, there is a cost to the humanity, if you like, that the Irish people have in terms of looking after those that come to this country. There is a cost in the state, and you know, it's we don't have unlimited pockets. So I'm not exactly sure what is being envisaged there in relation to those payments. You know, as I said, it is in my view quite modest of what is being paid, and you know, I know there's a lot of talk and a lot of stories out there in relation to who's getting what, and everybody is getting everything, and Irish people are getting nothing. Will be sometimes what you hear in the doors, unfortunately. But it is important that the Irish people have confidence in the asylum process. That we're a generous country, but that we're not a soft touch at the same time. And I think, you know, most people will understand the need to take people into the country, and of course the absolute need that we have for workers, for key workers who come here legally using the visa process. But it's important as well that as a country our generosity is not taken advantage of, and that we do all we can as well to ensure that we have strict processes that people have confidence in them and in terms of who comes to this country.
Yeah. Deputy Farrell, is it a difficult one for yourselves in opposition in Sinn Féin, because would ye actually do a whole lot different to what government are doing in terms of the asylum seeker question?
No, I actually don't think it's a difficult thing for us in opposition. I actually think, like, the more we have open and honest conversations, I think the better, you know, because it is something that people do want to want to talk about and they want to engage on. So I think that's important. Like, I mean, we've been clear for some time in relation to, you know, that this kind of 2-3 tier type of system that needed to be changed. It's going to cabinet, like, from what I understand today. So we'll see what comes out of that. In relation to our actual processes, like, we've been very clear here, you know, and I think most people will be of understanding in relation to this. Like, you need a human rights, like, led approach, right? But you need to make sure that it's absolutely fair for people. But you also need to make sure that it is efficient, and that when, you know, a decision is made, that decision is actually made and that it's enforced. So you're looking at it from a point of view whereby if somebody applies and they're granted, then they're granted and it's fair. But it needs to be done in a very efficient way. And then at the same time, if it's not granted, you know, and then it should also be enforced. And I think that's probably where people have kind of been wondering where it's at the moment with government. So, like, this is something that isn't new. Like, this is something that has been going on for a quite long period of time in terms of, like, people waiting for very long periods of time for a decision to be made. And that's not really fair on them either. Like, you know, when you're living in that kind of a limbo, and you can be waiting a very long period of time and get granted, or you might be waiting a very long period of time and not get granted, and, like, this kind of living in limbo. So we're very, very clear. Like, it needs to be fair, it needs to be efficient, and then equally it needs to be enforced.
Mm. I know that the Minister for Justice is also due to report back to Cabinet on the ongoing review of safe countries. Do you think we might see some movement there?
Are you asking me, or?
Yeah, Deputy Farrell, yeah.
Well, I obviously don't know what the Fine Gael position or the Minister's position will be or would be, and I suppose that'll be something that'll come out. Unfortunately, for many reasons, it's unfortunate that I can't read Hal McEntee's mind, but on that, I certainly can't. So, look, it'll be interesting to see what comes back. We have heard, obviously, that the government and cabinet were looking at drafting something in relation to Britain itself. We haven't seen that kind of come forward yet, so it'll be interesting to see when that does come forward, but at this moment in time I obviously don't know what Helen McEntee is going to be doing.
Alright, Senator Kyne, back to you. It's been a difficult and uncomfortable time for Minister McEntee and different ministers and government dealing with this situation. We saw the tents along, well, first in Dublin City Centre, but lately along the canal as well. So has it been, is pressure coming to bear on certain departments in government now?
Well, I think, during the lifetime of any government, there are always crises and different departments and ministers are under pressure, whether it's ministers for housing, health, or justice or immigration, which we've seen over the last number of years in various different guises. But I think Minister McEntee has equipped herself very well in relation to this issue, and the government has. And in fairness, the Taoiseach has taken a hands-on approach here to coordinate a lot of the issues that we've seen, whether it be in relation to the tents in Mount Street, which were clearly, you know, they were a health hazard, they were a danger to those in the tents and to other people as well. And he coordinated, cross-governmental response to this involving his own department in relation to the, you know, the Office of Public Works, Dublin City Council, the HSE, the Gardaí, to initiate a coordinated response, and the same in relation to the Grand Canal. But look, what Irish people cannot understand, and this is, you know, that people are coming here, you know, whether it be a charity or an NGO, are giving people tents, and then the taxpayers paying a few weeks later to have those tents removed as part of these initiatives. So clearly there needs to be a better response in relation to the accommodation, and I know the government is looking at, if you like, larger centres in certain parts of the country. I know there's one planned near Nace, or it's possibly up and running. That would be used to house a lot of people, that they will have, whether it be tented accommodation, whether they'll obviously have the wraparound supports there, and that if people are given a tent, they're given a tent to pitch it in that area or in a designated area, not on the side of the road. It's not safe for people in those situations, and it is also it can be a health hazard without proper sanitation as well. So it's a difficult issue. It's not obviously just justice. It's the immigration. It's housing. It's health. So there's a lot of departments involved. You know, okay, for the last number of weeks, Minister McEntee has been under pressure in relation to the numbers and what's happening with Rwanda and all that. Obviously, the Rwanda situation is not her doing. And as I've said on numerous occasions at numerous doors, you know, if you look at the UK, the official government policy in the UK is stop the boats. And with their air force, their navy, their army, and all the resources that the UK have, they haven't been able to stop the influx of people. And then a percentage of those people, obviously a high percentage of those people, are coming here across the border, and we have to deal with them, and we have to respond, and we have to put in place the processes to deal with it. And you know, from time to time, as we see this year in particular, the numbers have increased, and we've had to act and respond to that. So, look, this isn't easy, and as I said on your show previously, This is a situation and an issue that is going to be with us for a long number of years to come.
The reduction in entitlements for Ukrainian refugees, is it hoped that that'll, I suppose, incentivize a lot of them to head home and free up accommodation for international protection applicants?
Well, I think we've seen, anyway, a number of Ukrainians leaving the designated centres and you know, getting independent accommodation, you know, whether it be with in family units or friends or people they've met along the way, and you know, most people want to do that, to live independently, to make their own way, and I think, you know, we have effectively, you know, very high rate of employment. There are job vacancies out there, and I certainly hope that perhaps the reduction in payments, if that's what happens, that will incentivize more people and more Ukrainians to go out there and to take up positions of employment, because we need them. You know, we're crying out for labour in many parts and many sectors, and it's important, you know, subject to language barriers and everything else like that, and to training. You know, we need care. We need people working in nursing homes, and you know, if members of the Ukrainian community, you know, are sufficiently trained, then I think there could be a huge asset in relation to the skills shortfall that we have. So certainly, I think that would be the motivation here, as well, of course, as you know, to equalise the situation of Ukrainians vis-a-vis other asylum applicants.
Okay, Deputy Farrell, back to you. Do you take the point that a lot of this is out of Minister McEntee's hands in terms of the Rwanda policy, etc.?
I actually thought the way it was handled the week up, leading up into the Tory, like into the local elections in Britain and all, was a disaster. Like, I just thought it kind of fed right into the hands of the Tories, and like, as look, we all know what the Tories can be like, so I thought that was a bit of a disaster. Like, obviously we've heard that there's going to be legislation coming through, we haven't seen that. I also think, like, anything to do with housing by this government, unfortunately for so many people, obviously it really impacts on people, has been a disaster. We've seen that even just quite simply in the fact that Galway City is the only city that hasn't seen affordable housing coming on stream. So I think that I wouldn't say that everything is outside the hands of Helen McEntee, to be perfectly honest. I think that unfortunately a lot has been missed by her, and I also think that just in general, in terms of accommodation for anyone, has been a total disaster by this government, unfortunately. And I say that as unfortunately, because, you know, people are really struggling as a result of that. And since this time last year, I can't believe that I'm saying that housing has actually gotten worse in Galway since this time last year, but unfortunately it actually has, in terms of real life experiences for people. So I don't think it's something that, like, everything's outside of the control of the government. Like, I mean, the Tories will do what the Tories want to do. Like, we've seen that for generations. You know, Irish people have experienced that for generations from the Tories. But the reality is certain things are under our control. She has said she would bring legislation forward. We haven't seen that. And look, we'll see what comes out of the Cabinet meeting today. And obviously none of us can predict that. But that will, you know, we'll see what comes out of that, and we'll see what comes out over the next couple of days as well. But just in terms of accommodation in its generality, where it impacts on so many people, like, it just has been a disaster, and it's just not good enough, because it really does impact on people's lives.
All right, Sinn Féin Deputy Mairead Farrell and Fine Gael Senator Sean Kyne, thank you both for joining us on Galway Talks. What are your thoughts? Get them into us on 086-3833-553. You can phone Avon Reception on 091-77-0077 and email comments at goibayfm.ie. We're coming back and we're speaking to Tom Finn, who's the new CEO of Brookhaven Healthcare Group. We also have our Garda Sat, and we're talking about a lovely exhibition at the Kenny Gallery with Pádraig Rennie. That's all to come between now and 11. Good morning.
Galway Talks in association with Windsor Motor Mall. Find hundreds of used cars to suit your budget in Windsor Motor Mall, Galway, located on the Monavay Road.
You're listening to Galway Talks with John Morley. I'm joined in studio by Tom Finn, who is the new CEO of Brookhaven Healthcare Group. Tom, you're welcome onto the programme this morning. First, just give myself and our listeners a bit of a sense about you and how you got involved in the sector.
Thanks, John, for inviting me on. I've been in healthcare a long time at this stage, and I started actually as a general and psychiatric nurse back in the day. And by accident more than anything else, and eventually ended up moving to America and lived in Los Angeles for 12 years or so, mostly in healthcare, or pretty much all in healthcare, actually. Originally managing in emergency departments in pretty disadvantaged areas of LA, and then moved on to various different other healthcare organizations, and ultimately a CEO of a biotech laboratory. We did testing and clinical trials. One of the first tests we did actually was what's now the HPV vaccine here. Very, very exciting time. It was great experience living in America, and eventually came back to Ireland to work with the HSE, which is now the HSE, and stayed there for maybe 7 or 8 years, and again, moved on. I've worked in the Middle East more recently and came back. I was CEO of Aphidia, the diagnostic company here in Ireland, for quite a while. And then came back to Ireland from Saudi to run a group of nursing homes, predominantly on the East. And I joined Brookhaven in December. And we have our home, Choglock Inn, out in Mike Cullen. Just met a Mike Cullen man outside your kiosk here. And in Aberbrophy up in Mayo. So they're the homes in the West at the moment. But we're certainly looking to expand in the area, which makes sense if you want to have the economies of scale to run the nursing homes.
Mm. And we'll move on to talk about the sector, but take me back to America, because I imagine after you now being in Ireland the last while, and the healthcare system there, they are quite different. What learnings did you take from that time?
Well, they're very different. Like, healthcare is challenging in every country, and all the same challenges arise, but healthcare in America is predominantly private. Even the public healthcare for Medicare and retirement benefits are provided privately. So I suppose I was often asked the question, if I was to be sick somewhere, would you prefer to be sick? And it's probably in America, because everything happens very, very quickly. And you get treated very quickly, and you have results very quickly. And it's, every other country is improving, but America is very, very far ahead when it comes to that. But equally, Ireland has improved dramatically as well, and there's some incredibly good tertiary hospitals in Ireland, including Galway University Hospital. But there's a lot of misnomers about America and the cost of it, but pretty much, there is a public system, there's laws there where you have to be treated before you can even ask what your payment is. So it's very advanced, very, very advanced.
And the emergency department in Los Angeles, that must have been an experience.
Well, it was, because it was in Inglewood where the riots were, and we ran that emergency department. That's where the victims of the riots came into, and it was very different. It was a very, very busy area. It was a Catholic not-for-profit hospital in Inglewood. But right beside that big Randy's Donut sign you see in all the movies as you come into Inglewood. But very, very, I mean, very, very traumatic kind of emergency department where, you knew the police and the coroner and first names. But a very good experience, yeah.
Mm. So take me back now to Ireland and to your current position. You joined Brookhaven. How have you found the past few weeks and months?
Really good. I mean, it's one of the few family-owned nursing home groups in the country. A lot of nursing homes now are owned by European companies who've come in the last few years. So that's, it's a nice arrangement when you're working for a family group. We have 5 nursing homes at the moment, and Choglock Inn being the most local one here. A beautiful home. I've really become very fond of Galway, and in particular the team out in Mike Cullen. Being from South Carlow, and Galway is not a county I would have visited a lot, but I visit it a lot now and enjoy it. And having a home in Connemara is, we arrived here Sunday evening, it was spectacular to have that kind of sunshine and environment, and the ocean next door. So it's good. But Brookhaven is, as I say, we focus on the quality of the care, and we've done a huge amount of work to improve both care and the facilities themselves, and we'll keep investing in the facilities to provide services, you know, to the community and also to the HSE. Mm. Because nursing homes have changed. You know, it's not, you're not going in for 5 or 6 years anymore. They, people come into nursing homes much sicker for a lot shorter periods of time. And that's a good thing. I mean, then, you know, it shows that the HSE's home care strategies are working.
Yeah.
But when they come in for shorter periods and they're a lot sicker, and therefore the costs associated with that are a lot higher.
But you'd have a lot of experience dealing with that, because I know you did hold the senior executive positions in the HSE, most notably as the National Director of Acute Services. So what ways are you looking to enhance or improve the service that you provide?
I think, you know, the HSE, you know, is evolving, and Sláinte Care, I think, is very much a step in the right direction, and which basically has, you know, a strategy to have a fully integrated health delivery system. And, you know, we play a part in that. In my previous nursing home group, we had an arrangement with Cork University Hospital, for example, where patients who are ready to be discharged but had nowhere to go came to our nursing home as a subacute. So it's kind of a transition between acute and long-term care. Many of those went home. So, you know, that saved in the first 6 months, I think, about 17,000 bed days in the hospital. So it unplugs things, and I think it's the strategy to put people in the right place, you know, at the right time and as close to home as possible. So it works very well, and we've had discussions with the HSE in many areas around the country of duplicating that kind of subacute care model. But we do work closely with the HSE, and it's important that we do. Yeah.
Big problems facing the sector at present, the likes of, I suppose, the Fair Deal, the operation cost, staffing, lots of challenges.
Yes, I mean, Fair Deal is around a long time, and, you know, arguably it's not fit for purpose anymore. And if, you know, if we had this conversation a year and a half ago, it would probably be very negative towards the Fair Deal and the National Treatment Purchase Fund that manages it. But, you know, as I said earlier, it has improved in the last year, and there has been a significant effort in the last year to close the gap between Dublin, for example, which is very high Fair Deal rates, and more rural counties, and Galway would have been typically low. So in fairness to the NTPF and the government, they have moved in the last year to address that, which is helpful. It's not the perfect system, and as people become more ill coming into nursing homes or hospitals, you know, the money will have to follow the resident, because some people would cost take an awful lot more to look after than others. But in fairness to the government and to the NTPF, they've made significant inroads into that disparity.
Huge operational costs in the sector as well, though.
Yeah, and it's gone up dramatically, obviously, since the war broke out 2 years ago. So inflation was very high. Energy is a very big cost of any nursing home, because even on days like Sunday, elderly residents find it actually quite cold. So, you know, you're heating buildings somewhere. So energy costs went up. Pay costs, you know, is always under pressure. And so, yeah, I mean, inflation has brought things up probably dramatically, probably 15-16%. But again, that is softening, thankfully. Mm-hmm. And with the increased NTPF rates and the softening of inflation, it probably will go back somewhat towards where it was.
Yeah, and staff?
Staff, you know, no matter what country I've worked in, whether it's the Middle East, America, England, here, there's always healthcare, shortages of healthcare workers, both nurses and carers. We're in a better position now than we were maybe a year and a half ago. And when you come into summer, we get a lot of students who want experience, and that helps. And on the flip side, probably in places like Galway and Mayo, many people who work with us in the winter will go back to the hospitality sector in the summer. So it is a balancing act. Mm. And then competing, obviously, with the benefits that the HSE would offer. We tend to, like, for example, we will bring nurses in from abroad for 2 years, train them, but we know their career path is to transition in 2 years into the HSE, and that's fine. But, you know, that's but we have to manage that, you know. Mm.
It's an interesting discussion. Tom Finn, the CEO of Brookhaven Healthcare Group, thank you for joining us on Galway Talks and best of luck.
Thanks, Sean. Thank you.
Still to come on the programme today, we're looking at the Garda slot and we have Pádraig Rainey ahead of his exhibition in Kenny Gallery. That's next. Good morning.
Galway Talks in association with Windsor Motor Mall. Visit Windsor Motor Mall Galway on the Mona Bay Road. A new way to car shop.
You're listening to Galway Talks with John Morley. I'm joined in studio by Pádraig Rainey because he has a lovely exhibition coming to Kenny's Gallery. His new paintings and sculptures for 2024. Pádraig, good morning, and just talk to us about it. I know you're focusing a lot on the sculptures as well as the paintings this time.
Good morning. Yes, I am. I have more bronze pieces in this exhibition than any exhibition I did before. So my main focus was on that. But in effect, the exhibition itself is in three parts, in that I have some plant flower paintings as well. Something new for me to do in painting at this stage. I used to do a lot of illustrations on botany stuff back 20, 25 years ago, pen and ink stuff for publishing and books and that sort of thing. But this is the first time that I have actually done paintings of the plants. I grow lilies of all kinds. If I see something, I can't remember the names of them all, but if they look challenging as a plant that I would like to paint, I try and grow them.
Mm.
So they're in the show, a few of them that I started with.
And I know you're from Carrow, but you're based now out in Mulholland. Talk us through the different themes that you go through in this exhibition.
In this exhibition?
Yeah.
The work and the sculpture, they vary a lot from stuff I did on the Tawn, like Cúchulainn and Fergus stuff. There's two pieces like that in it. I have, for the first time, made a bronze piece based on the house on the Inishark. I had an exhibition almost 4 years ago now, I think, in Kinney's, all based on Inishark. But this is the first time that I actually did a three-dimensional piece. It was an experimental piece, really, but it came off well, I thought.
Mm. It's clear that the landscape across the west of Ireland has really had an impact on your work.
Oh, definitely had, yes. Even when I think back when I didn't see myself as a landscape painter, I remember Desmond McCavock, who was the critic for the Irish Times at the time, he was out at the house, and he said, "Pádraig, I know you always say that you're not a landscape painter, but everything you do," he said, "is coming out of your landscape."
Definitely.
So I think that was true, actually, looking back.
And it's not the first time you focused in on places like Inishark. I know you had that acclaimed Inishark project as well, which was very well received.
Yes, it was. And the first time, a shark still has a hold on me in some way that I can't explain, but there is a few pieces from Shark in this exhibition as well.
Mm.
The first time I landed on Shark, I was there, really. It was do with the bird count, peregrine falcon count, really. But once I landed and I saw the village, I got hooked on the place in a way that I cannot explain in words. But I got a message from an email from a lady in California, and she saw my work on the website, and her great-grandfather or something came from the island, and wow, she was back once. I can't explain, she said, the feeling that I got when I landed on that island, in the words, "But your painting has it."
Mm.
So it's an Orcadai. Yeah, it's a wonderful place.
And it leads on nicely to my next question. There must be a great affinity for your work in the Irish expat community, both whether it's UK or America or further afield.
Yes. There is, yes, more and more that is happening. And of course, with the web now and that sort of thing, and Kenny's puts up the work on their website straight away, there's always been a reaction from the States for the show, which a good reaction, and it helps to show the work worldwide.
Mm. Talk to us about the exhibition. It gets officially opened now on Friday night in Kenny's.
Yes, in Lisbon, yeah.
And you have a special guest opening for you.
I do. Eoghan Quinlan, is a good friend and knows my work well, and I'm looking forward to hearing what he has to say.
It's a good run, though, from the 17th of May to the 11th of June. And how many pieces around do you have, or what are the highlights?
If Tom and Kenny and Dean Kelly has managed to get them all in, it'll go over, it'll be close to 60, I think.
Wow.
Yeah.
And that's a mixture of what, paintings,
painting
sculptures?
Painting and sculpture, yeah. And in painting, there's acrylic painting and watercolour, yeah.
Yeah. And what are your personal favourites, or is that like asking to pick between the children? Painting, or, yeah.
Really, I don't have that. I paint a lot, and some of the stuff would go into a three-dimensional. And when I'm working on that, sometimes I think that would be better in a painting, and I go back to the painting, and one thing leads to another.
Yeah.
You know, and it that happens a lot. You know, there was that's always been the case with artists, I think, way back in the centuries, that some paintings, people don't think about it, but actually they would make a three-dimensional figure
And
to paint from.
And do you have any other exhibitions planned after Kenny for the rest of the year? That
There is a few things in the works, yes, if they come off, and hopefully, yes.
Brilliant. Well, the very best of luck with you. Are you finding a good uptake on the art pieces now? Because there definitely is a market there in America, as we've talked about already.
Yes, it is. It is. It is good. Yeah. Yeah.
Brilliant. The very best of luck with it, Pádraig Rainey. And the exhibition is running in the Kenny Gallery here in Galway between the 17th of May, that's this Friday, until the 11th of June. It's been officially opened on Friday night at 6 o'clock by Aidan Cullen at the University of Galway, and broadcaster at 6 o'clock. So do get down there and have a look at all the exhibitions there, between the paintings and the sculptures as well. The works are available for sale, and the exhibition continues right through until the 11th of June. So, Pádraig Rainey, thank you for joining us on Galway Talks, and the very best of luck with all the paintings and sculptures into the future.
Thank you.
Still to come on the programme today, we have trending topics. Joshua Byrne joins us to discuss a number of issues that have crossed our desk. We're also looking at the Evergreen slot with Helen Mannion, and we have music mornings. And this morning, it is the term and turn of Dead Letter Devils. They are a folk and bluegrass band, and I must say, they're going to perform three pieces for us, and they're absolutely brilliant. So they're releasing a lot of music, and they were just in Munro's at the weekend, and they're a lively bunch. So do stay tuned for that. I believe they have a fiddle, harmonica, guitars, the whole works, and beautiful singing as well. So the Dead Letter Devils, and they're actually from Galway. They're based here in Galway, a number of the members, and they've been going for the past few years. So we really look forward to hearing from them. All that and a whole range of more topics coming up here on Galway Talks between now and 12 noon. If you want to get a text and WhatsApp into us, do so on our number 086-38-3553. We're back after news. Good morning.
Galway Talks in association with Windsor Motor Mall. Drive happy in Windsor Motor Mall, Galway, with hundreds of used cars to suit your budget. We'll be right back.